This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hey, this is Jimmy Mack from Rebel Force Radio. Besides Star Wars, if you're itching to dive deep into all things geek, park your speeder right here at the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast. And may the Force be with you always.
Kenner Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back collection. It's Millennium Falcon that you put together. Batteries not included.
Nice landing, Han Solo. Uh-oh, come on, Chewbacca. Stormtroopers are coming.
Action figures each sold separately.
Grab your sunscreen and your blasters. This is the Scarif Podcast.
Okay, Mr. Freeman.
Have a seat over there by that mic.
And ready when you are.
I'm Morgan Freeman, and I think it's time to listen to those dumb bastards over in Scarif.
Well, that wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
Today is nothing short of a miracle. What you're going to hear about today.
What's up, Scuttlebutt Nation? This is Ro from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Podcast, and welcome to a latest edition of the show. This is going to be a good one. You know, from time to time, we always post some really great stuff and some really great Twitter feedback, and we get some folks to kind of answer and contribute, and that's one of the reasons I love social media. One of the reasons I love interacting with people that may or may not listen to the show, but definitely interact with me on the Twitters. There, I posted I think it was a picture of one of my favorite Star Wars coffee table books, and it is Star Wars Chronicles, and I know. There might be a couple of different versions of the Chronicles book, but there's one in particular that has a very hardcover die-cut TIE fighter window pattern to it, which I love. And one of our followers, Brian Buck, reached out and said this is a great book and suggested that we do a show on Star Wars coffee table books. And here we are. I'm sitting here with Brian. Brian, how's it going tonight?
It's going amazing. Thank you for having me be a part of this. Been looking forward to it.
Yes, absolutely. I know we had to postpone the last time we scheduled a recording session, but we are here and we are ready to talk Star Wars. First, I really, you know, since obviously this is your first time on the show, the first time here, I wanted to ask you what your Star Wars story is. And obviously, we're listening to our voices, but as we're recording on StreamYard here, you obviously seem like a what did Kylo say on Saturday Night Live? You look like a Star Wars fan.
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, I've been a fan. I'm definitely of the Star Wars generation. I don't remember seeing A New Hope in theaters because I would have been 4. My parents can't quite remember if they took me there or not. But I distinctly remember in daycare, my best friend Greg had a toy Millennium Falcon and the action figures and really grew to just love what it looked like. And then I saw in 1980, I would have been going into first grade, Empire Strikes Back in the theaters, completely changed my life. And I've been obsessed ever since. Diehard Kenner collector, diehard Topps fan, used to love the original Marvel run comics. Was over the moon when widescreen VHS was finally available. And so, yeah, I've been following on. And I like all I can. I'm a Star Wars apologist. I will find something that I like about everything. Some movies are more difficult than others, but I will say Last Jedi has incredible cinematography.
It better look good for $300 million.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I love everything Star Wars. And I think one of the things that I love about Star Wars, and it's grown even more as I'm older, But going back to the Topps days, I remember a Topps card for Empire Strikes Back, and it was the Ralph McQuarrie Darth Vader drawing on the bridge of his executor. And I remember going, what's this artwork and what is that? And then I would get the orange cards where it would show the behind the scenes. And that's when you started to realize how much there was a story about the making of the movies that was just as compelling as the movie themselves. And so I used to love the specials on how they made the movies and the special effects. And I'm in the Seattle area, and there's a local show around Return of the Jedi that showed the speeder bike chase and how they did the sounds through a keyboard. And I just always found that fascinating. So
absolutely. I think I was just talking to a buddy of mine, Sean Crummel. He's a artist that we know here on the Twitters there. And that documentary, and I love the behind the scenes stuff. The one in particular that I always say that I almost used it as a textbook is the one that they recently put it on Disney Plus, From Star Wars to Jedi. And that one, but again, like any behind the scenes of Star Wars, you know, I, as a kid, I absorbed as much as I could. I watched, I read, you know, grabbed, any of the Starlog magazines to kind of flip through and take a look at some pictures behind the scenes. It's fascinating. It was fascinating to me as a kid. I noticed that we both have a little gray in our beard. I did, happen to catch Star Wars on the big screen when it first came out in 77. I was 8 years old and, watching that Star Destroyer go overhead, my jaw dropped to the floor and I was sold hook, line, and sinker. The aspect of Star Wars really touches people in different ways. Obviously, it's a franchise that is a couple of decades old. It's 40 plus years old and people are still talking about it. And I wanted to get your take again, because you're new here. But what is it about and again, I understand that for different people, Star Wars says different things, you know, whether it's the original trilogy, the prequel, the sequels, at any age. But what is it about Star Wars in general that keeps people talking about it?
Let me think. When you started to ask this, the first thing that came to mind was right before my son was born. So I want to say 2009 in the Seattle area, it was Star Wars in Concert, where they had the full orchestra with Anthony Daniels as the MC. And
I love that one. They brought it here to Chicago and it was amazing.
Yeah. And I hope they do it again someday. And I remember going to that, and it was fascinating to see the crowd that showed up to that, because it was our generation, it was our parents' generation, and then kids of kids, and the kids were dressed up. And it was the first time I ever really got that generational, it's not just the thing that I'm into or kind of in the geeky stuff. But so I think there's just that piece of, I think a family member has a connection to it and other people have it. You know, my wife always jokes, I'm a Star Wars fan by force, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And my son is, but then it kind of gets past the, okay, I'll watch it with dad, to going, I really like this, sure. Because there's something about the story, there's something about the characters. And as we all know, the mythology of it touches on some aspects for all of us. So I think that is the piece, that there's always an in that you can find to enjoy about it.
Absolutely. And I think George Lucas did such a wonderful job in incorporating some of those mythological elements that mankind has enjoyed in storytelling since the beginning of time. You know, the mythology, the lore, the familiar archetypes that are kind of embedded in the history of man. I think, from Roman times to ancient stories that tell us about, you know, the relationships between good and evil, et cetera, et cetera. It really does play on a very sophisticated primordial level. And I think that's why it resonates universally for the most part. I think it's really great.
Yeah, I agree.
I wanted to, so that is fantastic. So we're going to talk a little bit about, not a little bit, we're going to talk, really go deep into Star Wars coffee table books, because I think, like I was telling you before we started rolling, you know, I took out my Chronicles book, and then I started looking through some of the other books that I had, and I'm like, wow, I really do have a lot of coffee table books. So before, you know, we wanted to discuss Chronicles specifically, but let's also touch on some of the other books that I guess we could give honorable mentions to when it comes to Star Wars coffee books. What are some of your other, you know, we can call them like our top three other coffee table books. What do you got?
Yeah, so I think Chronicles is definitely a recommendation. There is an amazing two-volume set called Star Wars Art, Ralph McQuarrie, that is every one of his drawings and giant spreads of all of his original trilogy stuff, including re-releases of the Kevin J. Anderson stuff. But yeah, that is a gorgeous volume, and it goes on sale on Amazon every now and then. So pricey, but you're going to love every page. One of my other favorite books is The Sounds of Star Wars. It was by J.W. Rinsler, working with Ben Burtt. And not only is it gorgeous photography, but it actually has like a little thing where you plug in over 100 different Star Wars noises. And it's the story behind each sound. And yes, we know, like, one of my favorite, I didn't know this, the sound of the Tusken Raiders is a donkey in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And then, like, what are the sounds that they use to get the sound of the walkers, and how did they mix it together? And one of my other favorites is a Stephen Sansweet book called Star Wars Posters. Mm-hmm. And that goes all the way through 2005. There's a couple of books on their Star Wars art posters versus the Sansweet. The Sansweet one, I'm a purist where I enjoy the poster artwork with the text and the credits on there, versus the art book doesn't have those credits. And so, and they're really nice big versions of all of the posters. And you start to realize, especially in the original trilogy, how much variety there was in the posters around the world with different releases, where by the prequels, they're pretty much all the same posters with different languages. But if you really enjoy that kind of artwork, those are incredible books. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one of the posters that is always that always comes to mind when I hear about foreign Star Wars posters is the Polish poster, where Darth Vader's head is exploding into a million pieces. I find that kind of interesting and funny at the same time. The poster books are great. The other books that that I would love for folks to kind of maybe do a little Google search. First of all, I love all of the art of books, the art of Star Wars, the art of The Empire Strikes Back. You know, it gives you a very nice behind the scenes look at the original trilogies, and, you know, obviously the rest of them too. It also, I think, the art of books, some of them have the scripts that are that were used, you know, so you can kind of follow along or check out any, you know, changes or anything from script to screen, as they say. So I really love that. And, you know, getting to you had mentioned some behind the scenes stuff. I think as a kid, you know, taking a look at the story of how Ben Burtt, you know, decided to record the audio for the laser blasts, you know, the high tension wire there. I remember a friend of mine, we used to go to school every morning, and there was a high tension wire in an alley a block from my house. I would take a piece of metal and just, you know, every day walk over it and go pew, pew, pew. You know, so it's something that has stuck with me, you know, since I was a kid. And if I ever find another tension wire, you know, walking around the neighborhood, I'm definitely going to walk up to it and hit it with something, because that's what you do, of course. Right. All the behind, you know, everybody that knows me, obviously, all the behind the scenes stuff for Star Wars really fascinated me as a kid. And it's it kind of drove my my need to learn as much as I could. And it guided me, you know, career wise. I run a video production company. I'm a camera person. I edit. So it was fascinating to me. And obviously, as a kid, you would think that, you know, all the spaceships and the cool laser beams and laser swords really get to you. But, you know, at 7 years old, I was like, wow, I want to be a camera guy. So it's fascinating. But one of the books that I really was very surprised, as I said, before we started rolling, the prequel trilogy has a couple of different costumes books, but one in particular that is a gorgeous, gorgeous book. Dressing a Galaxy. And this is costumes from episode one by Trisha Biggar. It is such a beautiful book. I can't say enough about it. The photography in that book is amazing. You've got so much detail in a lot of the costumes from the prequel trilogy. You know, obviously episode one had a lot of costume changes for a lot of characters. You've got Padme, you've got Palpatine. There is so much wonderful, wonderful, rich texture in that book. So I think if you don't own it, or if you can kind of maybe grab a peek at it somewhere, I would encourage everyone to do so. It's just a beautiful book.
Yeah, I love it. They like do close-ups on the fabrics, which I think were really amazing. And just to even go through in here, I can't remember what the wool is, but how they found the certain kind of wool for Obi-Wan Kenobi's cloak to be as close as possible to what they were able to source for Alec Guinness. Like, to see that level of care that went into the prequels. Once again, as you start to see the artistry, it's not just characters in a costume, but you start to really see the artistry from the people involved. And I think that's the ultimate enjoyment out of that Dressing the Galaxy book.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, Star Wars in general, you know, George Lucas has assigned, you know, himself to create kind of a history of all the characters, even though they're background characters. You know, sometimes we as fans, we want a little more than what's on screen. It's nice to kind of, you know, flip through a book and then maybe read a little extra about a favorite character that might be in the corner of a creature cantina or a Jabba the Hutt palace. So it's kind of cool to be able to kind of, you know, extrapolate more information. You know, one of the things that we do as fans is try to fill in the blanks. So it's nice to have a lot of extra material in these very, very handsome books. I was going to ask you a question, because this question was posed to me some time ago last week. What is a coffee table book, or what does a coffee table book entail? What are some of the characteristics?
Yeah, and that was funny. I saw that and I was like, well, I kind of have my own understanding. But Wikipedia says it's an oversized hardcover, often with a lot of images and minimal text. And what I like in that description is it also talks about is something that should spark conversation. Which, yes, I think is really fun. Like, if you see something interesting and you're like, oh, what is that? And what does this mean? And especially when you're talking about some of the obscure cantina characters, yeah, you know, the fact that Obi-Wan and Luke show up into this place with over 30 different interesting backstories, that is interesting enough. And so the fact that a coffee table book can do that, it made me actually think of another coffee table book I didn't mention that's great. is Magic of the Myth, which came out around the time of the Smithsonian exhibit. Beautiful artwork, and it talks about the story of Joseph Campbell's, how it lays over with the Star Wars story. That's an amazing coffee table book. And that's one I think could really start a lot of conversations.
Absolutely. I have that. I bought it at the Smithsonian when I went to DC to check out the exhibit. And it's actually the, you know, funny story. My buddy and I went, we enjoyed it. And, you know, I'm sure they do this on purpose. The exhibit empties out conveniently into the gift store, the gift shop. We separated and I came back holding a white box. And I said, I had this blank look on my face and my buddy's like, what did you do? And I had this white box with an Icons logo on it. And I said, I just bought $1,000 lightsaber. But yeah, that's before I was married and had other commitments, you know, buying $1,000 lightsabers. But it is again, you know, getting back to some of the making ofs, you get some really great photography. And it's amazing to me that all of this stuff exists, and that you know, folks like Steven Sansweet, and then obviously the Lucasfilm Archives, they keep a lot of the stuff. And I think it's important not just to the fans that some of the stuff is still around. And I know I talked about Prop Store and some of the auction pieces that have been auctioned off from the Anthony Daniels collection. But it's wonderful to, you know, maybe have some fans of the series own some of these pieces. But I think that's one of the biggest reasons we collect, to be able to be, you know, in some way a part of something that we love. And it's just really wonderful and great.
Hey friends, just a quick reminder, if you enjoy our content and don't want to commit to a Patreon tier, you can show your love in other ways.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you can take advantage of our merchandise store at TeePublic, where we've got cool designs from all across the Red 5 network. Look for sale announcements and save up to 30 to 35% on all our merchandise.
Oh, nice.
And there's also a very convenient way to help support the channel. As you know, coffee is our friend. It keeps us going. You can show your appreciation by heading over to buymeacoffee.com/scarif. buymeacoffee.com/scarif. Any amount starting at $5, a one-time treat for us to help with all the stuff it takes to maintain the quality you deserve. And remember, it's always sunny on Scarif, and that's the Scuttlebutt. And pass the cream, please.
Hello.
Hi, this is Sean from Extra Star Wars.
Oh.
And you're listening to the Scarif Scuttlebutt.
This is Sentry Mode.
Alrighty, folks, you heard that jingle. It's time for Sentry Mode, and it's our quick little Q&A segment. I invite a friend, and I ask 5 questions. It's a way to get to know you, and it's a way to get to know the knowledge, the deep nerd knowledge of some of our followers and some of our friends. And tonight, we've got actor David Jones. You saw him on Scarif Live a couple of weekends ago. How you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Ro?
Fantastic as well. Before we started rolling, I remember in the DMs, I was asking you what level of quiz you'd like, and you yourself said that you were a Jedi Master. So are you ready?
Let's rock.
Excellent. All right. Sentry Mode. Question number one. This is a softball. I'm going to toss a simple one towards you. Here we go. Which studio first released and distributed Star Wars?
Studio? Oh. What did George Lucas do in 77? Not Sony, not MGM.
Do you remember the song?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yep, I know it, but I'm totally drawing a blank right now. Oh, my God. Yeah, let me do a rewind on that one after.
All right, we'll come back to it. Let's see if you let's see if it hits you. All right.
Oh my God.
Question number two: what is the name of any other Ewok other than Wicket?
What was his name? Who's the? Oh my God. Wicket. Oh my God. What was the other Ewok's name?
Any other Ewok other than Wicket?
Oh, give me a second. Oh, yeah. When they're on Endor. Oh, my God.
Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
Many people's favorite Star War.
Chief Chirpa, isn't it?
There you go. Chief Chirpa. He is another Ewok that is not named Wicket, but many wonderful Ewoks played their part in taking down the Empire in Return of the Jedi. Chief Chirpa is definitely one of them. So, yes, absolutely right. All right, moving right along. Question number three. This might be a little bit of a deep dive. I request that you dive deep into your soul and try to pull this one out. Here we go. Question number three on Century Mode. What existing property did George Lucas want to do new movies with but couldn't get the rights to, so he decided to make his own space fantasy?
Not Star Trek. What did he do? He just did the other movie with Harrison Ford before Star Wars.
Right. And remember, Star Wars is based on serials of the 50s.
Oh,
what other property was out there that was a little bit kind of like Star Wars, but very old fashioned? You can
Star Trek.
No. You can see spaceships hanging on strings in the special effects.
Yes. Oh, my.
Buster, I'll give you a hint. Buster Crab.
Nope, not my era, unfortunately. You're destroying me right now.
All right, we'll get back to that one as well. Let's see if anything pops in your head. Question number four, Century Mode. In A New Hope, Obi-Wan tells Luke that his father was a Jedi. Luke looks at him and corrects Obi-Wan and says, no, he wasn't. He was a what?
Navigator on a spice freighter.
There you go. No, my father was a navigator on a spice freighter.
Oh. You ever fought in the Clone Wars?
So you think, Luke. Yes, actually. And then we found out the truth. Excellent. All right. Question number five. This is another kind of a behind-the-scenes deep dive that has crept into the fandom, into the lore, because obviously he's a very popular character, and there have been some tidbits about this particular topic. Darth Vader's chest has, besides having a couple of buttons on there, it also has some writing on it, especially in the Empire Strikes Back costume version. What does the writing say? And for extra points, what language is it in? And this one is a good question because it could spur so much debate and discussion on a complete. I might actually take this do a quick cuts on it, but yeah, Darth Vader's chest box, besides having the buttons, it's got something written on there.
His deeds will not be forgiven until he merits.
You are absolutely right.
Perfect.
Absolutely correct. His deeds will not be forgiven until he merits. Do you remember what language it's in?
No, I do not.
That would be ancient Hebrew. The language of the Sith. No, I'm just kidding.
What have you done with those plans?
It's pretty amazing how kind of George Lucas, intermingles some of our, real life lore into his tale of fantasy. I think mm-hmm. that's one of the things that, kind of makes Star Wars a little bit more grounded in, I don't want to say reality, but in some weird, magical, fantastical kind of way that makes us, makes us love the franchise that much more.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think, go ahead.
Your first question was 20th Century Fox.
That is correct.
My God.
20th Century Fox was the studio that released and distributed Star Wars. And what about question number three? What existing property did George Lucas want to do new movies with but couldn't get the rights to? So he just said, I'll just do my own.
I want to say The Thing, but that was John Carpenter in the original Halloween.
And
I do not know.
Flash
was
Gordon.
Was it Flash Gordon?
Flash Gordon. So you didn't do bad.
For Jedi did Master. Terrible.
you redeemed yourself as Vader's chest sign says. Your deeds have been forgiven, and you merited credit. So excellent.
Can we drop down a level next time?
Excellent. David, thank you so much for joining us on this little segment of Sentry Mode, our Q&A. A quick little question and answer session here in the middle of an episode. I hope you had fun.
I did. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. All right, guys. Before we leave, obviously, where can people find you to say hello there?
You'll see me in theaters in Thanksgiving. You can see me as the Reitmar security guard in this Eli Roth movie, Thanksgiving. You can also find me on Twitter or X. And Instagram at actordamon86official.
All right. Until next time, let's get back to the conversation here on the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast.
This is Sentry Mode.
Have an incoming transmission from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Hotline, Commander, and we can't withstand a voicemail of this magnitude!
Hey, Ro, it's Brown Leader from Hyperspace Heroes, and wanted to send you a quick voicemail and follow up to, because I did listen to episode 183, and wanted to just say that my favorite things about the Scarif podcast would be your quick cut segments, just like episode 183, your Sentry Mode, your five questions episodes. Basically, anytime you just kind of sit down and have roundtable discussions, sometimes Star Wars, sometimes not Star Wars, and just seeing where the conversation goes. And I think those are probably my favorite formats to do that. So keep up the good work, and I'll just sign off with, that's no moon, that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, Star Wars fans and friends of the podcast, don't forget to leave the guys a voicemail for a chance to be included in the discussion. Let them know what's on your mind. Call 773-234-8659, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hello there. This is the Geeky Crochet, Maria, calling from all the way up in Naboo. It's always sunny at the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, everybody. This is Steve from Rebel Rock Radio, and you are listening to the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast.
Yeah, so let's get into, I wanted to ask you a question about Chronicles. How did you get it? Were you lucky enough to get it retail before the prices skyrocketed on the secondary market?
Oh man, I wished. Yeah, I saw the book when I was in college and couldn't afford it at retail price. But I remember flipping through it at the university bookstore and going, someday. Well, it took me 15 years before I ever was able to pick it up. Wow. And because I saw the prices skyrocket, and you know, of course, eBay happened, and I think I was finally able to snag it about $75 or $100 over what the original retail price was. Yeah. And it has always been my white whale of a book. And yeah, I'm so glad that I did get it, because it is really amazing. And I still think it hasn't been topped.
No, I know. It's and again, you know, getting back to the definition of a coffee table book, it is the ultimate coffee table book. Just looking at it sparks conversation. Just looking at it, you want to touch it. You know, I mentioned that the cover is hard cardboard. The book actually slips in to the cover. The cover is die cut. It's a TIE fighter pattern, the wing or the window of the TIE fighter, and there's a little Velcro strap, and then you unfasten, and the book kind of slides out, and it's a beautiful book. I'm not gonna brag, but
you should.
Two things. I got it as a birthday present, so I didn't pay for it back in the day, and I took it with me on a couple of conventions. I have Carrie Fisher's signature on it. I have Billy Dee Williams' signature on it. I have Peter Mayhew's signature, and Kenny Baker.
Wow, that's awesome. I would be so worried just trying to carry that book around at a convention. Was that difficult?
It was, yeah. I mean, not only because of the signatures, but it's really large and heavy. It's amazing how heavy it is. But you mentioned beautiful photography. It has some amazing double folded spreads. It's almost like, you know, they give you a good idea of size when it comes to, you know, the Imperial capital ships, and kind of a comparison of it. It's funny. There are some pages that unfold, double flaps. And it's like, is this actual size? It's so huge. And they're panoramic, and you get to see the size of an Imperial Star Destroyer versus, a frigate, TIE fighters and the X-wings and stuff like that. But again, the detail of the pictures, the documentation that Lucasfilm took to be able to pretty much take pictures of all the props and all the costumes in such a way that you're absolutely right. It's really unmatched. What are some of your notables when it comes to this book? What do you like to flip through?
Yeah, well, one of the things I just want to point out, though, it's not just like a photo of an X-Wing. It's like a photo of an X-Wing from the top, the left, the right, and the bottom. And so to really see the detail in each of those, I think, is what really makes it a bit unprecedented. That makes it really well. I love the Bondi models, but I don't know how to paint them. I love to actually look at the detail, how the Bondi models matches this actual model photography. But yeah, when I flip through it, a bunch of places that are where I like to go. One, some of the best photography of the Colin Cantwell
the prototype.
Concept models, prototype X-Wings and smuggler ship. Those are really cool, and you don't see those too often. You know, sometimes there might be behind the scenes or drawing, but to actually see the level of detail is really cool. I love the cantina, the detail of all of the cantina characters, including to visit the fly dude. Like, that's someone who has fallen off the radar. I mean, and I think the other thing, the fact that this was released in 1997, but there's no special edition. And so it truly is the original trilogy and one of the last books that didn't have that stuff in it, which sure. I don't mind the special edition. But the fact that now with Star Wars being as big as it is, I'm also a DK fan, which could be a whole nother episode because those are coffee table books. But now there's so much to cover. These smaller characters are starting to go away. Like, they're not appearing in books anymore because they just don't have space because there's so many main characters. The fact that the cantina has every little bizarre person that walks around Mos Eisley, and same thing in Jabba's palace, is all of, there's even some puppets that I've never seen in other books.
Yes.
That show up. So those are some of my favorite spots.
Sure. And that's amazing too, because, you know, the actor / ILM technician that was the guy inside Boba Fett, for the special editions, he's been on the show. Mark Austin. You know, Mark Austin on Twitter, every so often posts some pictures from behind the scenes of just regular movies. But obviously, you know, he was a technician for ILM back in the day. He was the guy inside the suit for Boba Fett during the special editions. And, you know, whether it's him posting pictures behind the scenes, sometimes I do see pictures that I've never seen before. And to me, it's amazing that, you know, how far removed are we from 1977 that I'm still seeing pictures behind the scenes of Star Wars that maybe I haven't seen ever? So yeah, this book, along with a lot of the Star Wars coffee table books, are really a treasury of documentation of this series, of this film. And it, to me, it's amazing. It's I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad they're out there. Just a wonderful, wonderful, you know, piece of history to be able to, you know, kind of flip through the pages of this Chronicles book. And like I said, I mean, there's a lot of other great books out there. But, you know, you said it earlier, this book is unmatched when it comes to the photography and the detail of some of the stuff. I mean, it even has, you know, the Star Wars holiday special stuff in there.
Yeah.
You've got
and the Ewok pages, movies.
Right. Yeah. You've got a couple of pages of animated Boba Fett. And you know, obviously the story of how that all came to be. So it's you know, George Lucas might not have been too thrilled with how that came out, but you know, at least it has some sort of official documentation in this book, which is really awesome.
Yeah, I was really surprised, especially getting this book this many years ago, after the fact, because, you know, back then, VHS bootlegs are the only way to ever see the Star Wars Holiday Special. And I don't even think Star Wars Insider was even talking about it. And so the fact that they had so much detail and pictures from that time was pretty amazing that they celebrated that through an official Lucasfilm book. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was flipping through when I did see the pages of animated Boba Fett. You know, there's a whole section on Boba Fett too, and I think the photography and the documentation of Boba Fett's costume is just unparalleled. There must be 5 or 6 pages of Boba Fett. You know, the actor Jeremy Bullock trying on some of the pieces, Joe Johnston holding you know, the mask and trying on some of the pieces. Everything is laid out in such a way that I mean, it's a great resource too for cosplayers to be able to see, you know, what goes where and how this is built. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, and one of the things that I also find fascinating, because I'm also a figure nerd, you know, to really see, oh, what does the red and yellow gauntlet Boba Fett mean versus the green versus the both reds? Like, you start to get a sense on what pictures were taken on set versus maybe pre-production photos or maybe just publicity photos where they threw suits together just for some pictures, but they weren't always accurate. And there's so much photography in this, you start to get a sense on, oh, okay, this went there, because they also have some of the timing documented in there, like, oh, this is prototype Fett or the J guys. And I think it was even before they even had the word J guys, right?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. You know, one of the things that makes it even more enjoyable to watch, and we all, we all recognize the term a used galaxy. I think, I'm looking at some of the pictures of the Boba Fett documentation in the book, and just the fact that, he's got scratches and nicks and some paint peeling off. Not just his costume, but I think the overall look of Star Wars, I think that's one of the other reasons that that it really fascinates people, and it fascinates people's imagination, because it really does feel like, all of these things happened somewhere far away long ago.
Yeah. One of the things I found interesting when we were getting ready for this is I don't really know who the author Deborah Fine was. And when I was researching, it looks like she was an ILM researcher and did a lot of stuff on the Indiana Jones films. And so I'm like, oh, who was she to have written this amazing book? And I was like, has she written anything else? And I haven't been able to find it.
It's weird, though, too, because it's kind of a common name. There's a motivational speaker named Deborah Fine. I'm not sure if that's the same person, though.
Well, if it was about this book, I get motivated every time I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Deborah Fine, speaker and best-selling author of The Fine Art of Small Talk. Huh. Interesting. But it's a really, really fantastic book. I'm looking at the four-page fold-out section. It's got the Millennium Falcon, an X-Wing, Skyhopper, Jabba's Sail Barge, an AT-AT, TIE Fighter, Scout Walker, and the Sandcrawler, along with some other smaller items there. But it is just a fantastic four-page spread with some really great, to scale, photography. You've got a speeder bike that I didn't really notice on the bottom, one of the bottom pages, which is to scale. So that's pretty awesome.
They also have a section on Star Tours and the original model for the ship and some of the concept art behind it. That is also really fascinating. And then what's kind of funny, it feels a bit old now, but back then, 1997, there's a section on A New Saga and novels talking about the heir to the Empire, Courtship of Princess Leia, Truce of Bacchira, and the Dark Empire comics, which is kind of fun. Once again, as a moment in time,
sure,
it really captured everything up to that moment.
Yes. And, it's titled aptly, Chronicles. I mean, really, from start to up to that point. I mean, it is really the ultimate making of. You've got, some samples of matte paintings. You've got early concept models, costumes, and details. And like you said, the original Rex from Star Tours, which I know is one of our patrons' favorite Rexes. That one goes to you, Nick, Backyard TARDIS. But it's amazing. Again, just the photography is top notch. I just love the fact that it's documented as well as it is, and it gives you so much tidbits and so many details. You really cannot get tired of flipping through these pages, because they're beautiful, they're fun to read, and you may pick up a couple of tidbits in there from time to time if you know what you're looking for. It's funny, there's one page that lists out some of the names of the X-Wing pilots during the Death Star trench. And you've got Red 2, who was Wedge Antilles. Red 3, Biggs Darklighter. The Red Leader, they don't give him a Star Wars name. His name is Dave.
Yeah.
In parentheses, Red Leader is Dave. And then Red 4 is John D., which I'm assuming is going to be John Dykstra, the main camera guy. For the movies, for the original movies.
Did you ever get? And I guess one thing it's probably important to tell everyone: there's also a prequel version of this book.
I did not know that one.
Yeah, so it isn't as good, even though I'm obviously more of a fan of the original trilogy. But I think one of the key differences is. The prequel one seems more production photography. Like, these are the things we're using that they look kind of nice, versus these are really more like behind the scenes pictures. Like, I'm looking here at Joe Johnson holding an early version of the Death Star in his hands for the camera.
Yes.
Like, this feels more hands on. The other book feels a little more polished, which makes sense given that the prequels were more digitally done. They probably weren't.
Yeah, you're right.
Testing and trying as much. But I remember breaking that one out recently because I always go back and forth on the debate on what color is Jango Fett's costume. Is it blue or purple? Because you see some people do the deep purple. But in that book, it's light blue.
Yeah. It's like what color is Han Solo's Hoth jacket all over again.
Exactly.
We have an incoming transmission from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Hotline, Commander, and we can't withstand a voicemail of this magnitude!
Hey, Ro, it's Brown Leader from Hyperspace Heroes, and responding to your tweet about coffee table books. And I have one. It is The Art of the Mandalorian Season 1, and it is definitely a prized possession for me because, one, it was a gift from a friend that helped me get into podcasting, and two, it's about Mando, Mandalorian, which I am a Mando stan, self-admittedly, and that is the show that launched live-action content on Disney Plus, and everything that came from it that has given us lots to talk about, and I'm just a sucker for the art of Star Wars anything anyway, from Ralph McQuarrie to Doug Chang to the rest of the modern artists love the art of. So there you go. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, Star Wars fans and friends of the podcast. Don't forget to leave the guys a voicemail for a chance to be included in the discussion. Let them know what's on your mind. Call 773-234-8659. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Okay, folks, it's time to tell you about our patrons, wonderful people that support the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast through our Patreon page. First up, we got Nicholas Schaefer. You may know him by his professional name, Backyard TARDIS. Don't forget, he's got a YouTube channel, Adventures in Locksmithing. If you think rekeying is all he does, well, head on over to his channel and prepare for the fun. And we can't forget our executors here, Scott and Kim of the Used and Abused podcast, along with Nicole. Peace, love, and fandoms. Join this Red 5 pod in the chat whenever they go live for fun and shenanigans. Take the jump to hyperspace to our Garrison tier. Big thanks to The Frank, longtime supporter and resident Back to the Future expert. Why don't you log in and say hello? What's up, Frank? And we've got Melanie Marquita. I love saying her name.
Melanie Marquita.
Big hugs to you, my friend. One of my favorite collaborators. All right, we got comics and cosmetics. Danny, licensed super nerd. Her YouTube channel's got the latest nerd news. and some incredibly well-researched tidbits on comics and cosmetics. Go give her a sub. Big shout out to Alex the Salty Nerd himself. Big thanks. And someone who brings joy to my timeline, Belinda. So glad you're on our list. A heartfelt thanks to my friend Greg at Rebel Base Card. So much card knowledge. Go give him a follow. I also want to say thanks to some of our other special followers like Vader Rapina and Rennie. And of course, I'd like to think that this follower was the show's first follower, Ali K and family. Thank you guys for your support. Big thanks to all our patrons and friends of the podcast. If you're interested in helping to keep us going strong around here and get some exclusive Scarif swag and content,
head on over to patreon.com/scarifscuttlebutt.
Remember, we can't have the scuttle without the butt.
Well, maybe I'll ask you this for the listeners. Is this book so old and we're talking about something in the past, or is it something that's still relevant and recommended for fans today?
Oh, wow. I think I don't think that a book as well documented as this, a book that has so much material in it that I don't think it could be so old that it would be irrelevant. I think it's a great documentation of something historic in our pop culture. I think if anything, I think they went overboard in how well this book is laid out and produced and documented. It's definitely, you know, we were looking on eBay for it. I mean, it commands a pretty penny, and I think it's worth it because of the work that was put into this book. So I don't think it's I don't think it would be a waste of time to tell people to, you know, if you can find it and afford it, I think it definitely is one of those books that needs to be in every Star Wars collection, along with some other fine, you know, Star Wars books. We mentioned some of the newer ones. I've got, you know, Prop Store gifted me the costumes from the original trilogy. That's a really nice one, too. But I think, you know, kudos to the photography, the detail that is put into the documentation of these books is just, it's top notch. I would recommend them till I'm blue in the face. There is no time limit, you know, for this sort of thing. So it's nice to, and it's, you know, it's also nice to, I don't know, somehow, you know, hope that young fans that are coming into the franchise kind of, you know, pick something up like this, flip through it and really, you know, take a look at the work that was done by, you know, people that actually, you know, sewed fabric or kit bashed to create, you know, ships and models and things like that. I think, you know, we take it for granted nowadays. You know, my son can take some 3D, you know, software program and push a couple of buttons and he's got a scene, you know, but back in the day, you know, we didn't have any of that. So I think it's great to be able to kind of share this type of knowledge, you know, teach the young generation what it's like, you know, to be able to have grown up a Star Wars fan in this era, get off my lawn, damn it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm also going to say is I don't believe Lucas books are going to make a book like this again.
No.
Because they are so focused on saga and all of the content, the obscure stuff or the amount of detail, I don't think they're going to make space on it. Like, I don't even know if they'll ever do an original trilogy focused book outside of 100 pages anymore. And so if you really do want to dive deeper into your appreciation about the making of the film, just like you said, and even if you just enjoy the artistry, the hand artistry of, like you said, I didn't realize until there's a really cool behind the scenes for Rogue One, where they were talking about the models and how they went and found the original models from the 70s and they digitally scanned those. So that way they were making digital models based off of the Greebles that they used back then. that I think is really cool. Like, you can go through and see the level of detail of, oh my gosh, that's part of the Saturn rocket that's in the X-Wing. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, that's part of a German tank that's on the Millennium Falcon. Like, that stuff is fascinating, but you can't see that until you see it from a different angles with the close-up pictures like this.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you know, some of the models, it's amazing to me the work that was put into some of the models, and then you see them for like what, half a frame, maybe 2.5 seconds, and they're gone. You know, again, it's just a kind of a testament to the people at ILM that were working on this show back in the 70s to really, you know, bring George Lucas's world alive. It's really what, you know, brought me into the fandom. The workmanship of Industrial Light and Magic, it really impressed me. From, you know, we talked about it earlier, from Ben Burtt's work in the sound effects to John Dykstra's camera work, the computer controlled, you know, motion control cameras and all that stuff. It, as a kid, it really fascinated me. And I think, you know, like Star Trek inspires like scientists and things like that and pilots, I think Star Wars does the same way. It inspires, you know, people to go out and create and be creative, in a different way. I think it's fantastic. I'm going to ask you one last question before we wrap up, because I think this is, it always fascinates me to hear different people's answer. Why do you think that people enjoy science fiction as a whole?
I think because it taps into who we are. Like, one of the things that I love about all storytelling is, no matter what genre it is, we always want to see ourselves in the main character. Like, we find like the pieces of us that we connect with. What I think that science fiction does is, because it's a world unlike anything we've ever experienced, we connect more to the character, because it's the heart that we get connected to more than anything. Because it goes back to a George Lucas thing on why he wanted orchestral music, why he wanted Ben Burtt to have music based off of things in the real world, because he says the images are going to be so fantastic that they're not going to have any human connection without those. And so what I think is, when the worlds of sci-fi are so out there, then we get really into the character and their needs and wants and dreams. And I think it helps us connect to those dreams and ourselves and what do we want.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Well said. I think, totally forgot about George Lucas's quote regarding the difference between what you see on screen and how grounded he wanted the movie to be, with the sound effects and the music and stuff like that, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I love that answer. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well said. Hey, Scuttle Buddies, we got a couple of voicemails regarding our recent Quick Cuts episode. Why don't you check them out?
Hey, this is Nicholas with the Backyard TARDIS. Just got finished listening to your Quick Cuts on whether anybody can use the Force. And I wanted to point something out. Everyone's concerned about a situation with the being. If she can use the Force, does that mean everybody can use the Force? But there was a line that Hu Ying said, actually two different lines that he said. One, he told Sabine that of all the Jedi that he's trained, she had the least aptitude. So he told that directly to her. But also, when he was talking with Ahsoka, he mentioned that her M count is low beyond the threshold the Jedi would consider training her. And to that, Ahsoka responded, "I am no Jedi." So that shows that she does have an M count, but it's below the threshold of being a Jedi. And this is something that they explored both in the EU, and that, I remember, I believe there was an EU book that talked about how Obi-Wan Kenobi just barely met the threshold to become a Jedi, and he had to work extra hard to be as skilled as he was, but proved to be one of the most influential Jedi out there. So there's just different things like that. I think just because she didn't qualify to be a Jedi by normal Jedi standards doesn't mean she wasn't close to the threshold, and they showed her ability being limited. I'd also like to point out that the world she was on was a world similar to the one seen in the Mortis arc that amplified Jedi power. Would she have that power outside of that planet, being able to use her powers? I would likely venture to say not, but that's my own fan theory. But a similar situation with Broom Boy. Everyone was upset about Broom Boy. I didn't like The Last Jedi, but how do we know he doesn't have a high Metachlorian count? How do we know that he isn't one of Luke's students that ran away after it was destroyed? We don't know anything about Broom Boy. He's an unknown. And when we look at in the prequels, what were the Jedi doing? They were going around the world finding unknown children who happened to have high M counts and taking them in. So he could just be that. But that's just, you know, my take, my scuttlebutt on the thing. Enjoy the conversation and look forward to more.
Thank you, Ro, for the Grogu earrings.
Hey, he's part of the Red 5 Network. When you listen to their podcast, they got amazing contests like a million. You could win yourself some earrings. They're real cute. And that's the scuttlebutt.
I showed my earrings.
Mm-hmm.
Just a reminder, if you want to leave a voicemail, give us a call at 773-234-8659. Scuttlebutt operators are standing by.
Can I share one other story really quick?
Yes, absolutely.
It was another book, and this conversation made me think about it. It's another coffee table book called Star Wars Storyboards. There's an original trilogy and a prequel one. And I remember getting the original trilogy one. And at first, I was kind of like, did I just spend $60 on something? It's kind of boring because I was flipping through it. And all of the drawings are pretty much drawings of famous shots that we already know and love. But then as I was starting to read into it, and I was talking about Joe Johnston, who was 19 at the time, brought in to do some ILM work, and they said, hey, can you go and do some of these drawings for us because we're really running behind? We need to get these storyboards out. And then it hit me, and one of the drawings that he did is through Darth Vader's cockpit, seeing Luke's X-Wing right in front. And I'm like, that is such an iconic shot that came from a 19-year-old's pencil.
Wow.
Under pressure. And once again, it made me think it goes from a pencil into our imaginations. Yes. For years, you know, decades later, those are still iconic shots. And so to me, I think that's the heart of Star Wars is the story of making the films is just as important as the stories in the film because they all tie into, like, it inspired you in photography and being a camera person. It inspired me as a coach and helping people tell their story. So all of these things just touch us in different ways and propels us. And that's what I think is exciting.
And that is how Star Wars inspires. Absolutely. Well said, Brian. Brian, this has been fantastic and a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on the Scare Scuttlebutt podcast to talk about our favorite coffee table books. Brian, where can people find you to say hello there?
Yeah, you can reach me at Twitter at Brian Buck. Or Instagram at Coach Brian Buck.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I had fun. Whenever you think of another topic, come on back. We'll discuss it. We'll have another show here on the Scare Scuttlebutt podcast. But listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If you have your own thoughts on your favorite Star Wars coffee table books, why don't you leave us a voicemail and we'll play it on the next show. The Scare of Scuttlebutt hotline is 773-234-8659. Until next time, this is Ro. That is Brian. Remember, it's always sunny on Scarif, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
Star Wars fans and friends of the podcast, don't forget to leave the guys a voicemail for a chance to be included in the discussion. Let them know what's on your mind. Call 773-234-8659. And that's the Scuttlebutt.